Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
On the 6th of May 1970, Neil Blaney and Charles Haughey were dramatically sacked as cabinet ministers by Taoiseach Jack Lynch for their alleged involvement in illegal attempts to import guns into the Republic of Ireland. Now, it was referred to as the arms crisis, and it remains one of the most defining scandals in the history of modern Ireland. Gun Plot is a brand new 8-part podcast series from the documentary on One and a one-off TV documentary that re-examines the arms crisis. And the creators, Ronan Kelly and Nicolene Greer, are with me. You're both very welcome. Nicolene, I'm going to start with you. I've been listening to the podcast, grabbing every spare couple of minutes that I can because it's so intriguing. It takes you right back into the moment. And this is a 50-year-old story. It's number one in the podcast charts. There's obviously great interest in this piece of history.
Yeah, and we're absolutely delighted that it has seems to be proving popular. The third episode just dropped this morning and we're up to 150,000 downloads now across iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher. So it's a great start because typically I think in these podcast series it would be about after the third or fourth episode that we would hope that it would start to build momentum. So it's great to see this. We have a good start to it and people seem to be interested in it even though it is such an old story, if you like.
It's so dramatic. And the reason it's so dramatic is because, Ronan, of the audio that you've managed to get hold of.
Yeah, what happened about 2 years ago was that Michael Heaney, who's a former TV producer, was working on a PhD and subsequently a book called The Plot That Never Was about the arms crisis. And he interviewed barrister who was on the case at the time in 1970. And during the interview, the barrister took out some audio tapes and he said, I don't know if you knew it, but they recorded this case and here's some tapes that were given to me as a souvenir. So summer 2019, Michael came to us with these tapes and he said, you may be interested. And we thought we'd make a one-off documentary. We thought it'd be fascinating. You know, the sound of the courtroom from back then, the quality's actually pretty good. The sounds of the accents of the barristers. There's a certain amount of melodrama from the barristers, as you can imagine. And we went to the courts and the court says you have permission to use them. And then when we did some research into the story, we decided we'd make a podcast out of it because at that time we had a podcast, a hugely successful podcast called The Nobody's Own Running, and we thought this could make a podcast too. And interestingly, Nicolene was talking about the charts. One of the charts that's doing very well is Spotify, and that's mostly for younger people. And I think the reason for that is that a lot of younger people studied this in school and are revisiting it, whereas people like me, I'm in my 50s, I didn't study it in school. I was only 7 when it happened, and it's a lot of it's totally new to me. So for people younger than me, it's revisiting a story they heard about in school.
Well, I'd love people to hear some of that extraordinary audio now. And audio aired from inside an Irish courtroom, which, as you say, Roland, is a first for Irish broadcasting. Let's take a listen to some of those proceedings. This is Seamus McKenna, senior counsel for the prosecution, cross-examining Captain Kelly.
I was awaiting instructions as regards boss man. It would refer to Mr. Haughey, I would imagine, but I was not one bit worried whom he went to once he got the instructions.
Oh, now, do you want to go back on what you conceded?
I am not going back on anything. I wanted to get instructions from an official source back in Dublin.
You meant, I suggest, when you made that telephone call, this and this only, that Mr. Haughey would be asked for the final okay.
Well, this is what I assumed that he would ask Mr. Haughey.
Not ask me to assume anything. I asked you, was that what you meant?
Oh, yes, I meant him to go ask Mr. Haughey.
A final okay from Mr. Haughey?
Yes. A final okay. I asked for instructions and I said, ask the boss man, which was Mr. Haughey.
That is something else to hear that. Nicolene, will you tell us a little bit about Captain Kelly, the man who was being cross-examined there?
Yes, well, that was Irish Army Captain Kelly. He was one of the 5 men who were accused originally of this so-called plot at the time, along with Ministers Charles Haughey and Neil Blaney. The other 2 people that were on trial were John Kelly, who's MIRA, and a businessman, Albert Likes. Captain James Kelly, we actually start the podcast, I suppose, looking at it through his eyes. The podcast, the first the public knew, as you say, was that May 1970, when the two government ministers were dramatically sacked, and that led to the trials and the subsequent, fallout from that. But we go back in the podcast right to the year before, to August 1969 in Derry, which was really the events that kicked off the whole thing, the Battle of the Bogside. And Captain James Kelly had happened to be there on leave, as it happened, but saw the whole events happen before him, and came back and reported that to his superior officer, Colonel Michael Heffernan, and then subsequently started meeting with Neil Blaney primarily, because Neil Blaney and Charles Haughey had been put in charge of a subcommittee and given £100,000 for the relief of the North. Mm. So that was really how he became involved with the whole affair, and he was the man on the ground for Neil Blaney and Charles Haughey, meeting with people in the North, trying to find out what it was that they were saying they needed, and that was mainly guns.
Yeah, and you spoke, Ronan, to some of the families involved. I'm thinking here of some members of Captain Kelly's family who I heard in the early episodes of the podcast. Will you tell us about your interactions with them and the stories that they told you and the impact all of this had on them?
That was the case with all of the families, actually. Even though it's 50 years ago, the Captain Kelly's family are more vocal than the other families, but we talked to Jim Gibbons' family as well. We talked to Eamon Blaney's family. And what they do give us is they give us a child's eye point of view of what it was like to see their fathers being arrested, but also then what it was like to suffer afterwards, because almost all of them suffered. And a lot of them, they had their telephones tapped. For the kids, that was a lot of fun because they could play with the special branch people on the other end of the line. But they also saw their parents worrying a lot. They saw their parents suffering a lot. One of the children said to us that she was sitting by a swimming pool in California at one point, and somebody came over to her, and she was an adult, and said, "There's the gunrunner's daughter." And it was something they could never get away from. And two of the children were in college, and they were kicked out of college societies because their parents were connected with the gun running, the so-called gun running saga. And it just endured. And there's a couple of reasons why it endured. One was that people refused to talk about it, that the people didn't accept what happened in the court case. But the other thing, and it's really interesting when you listen to Boris Johnson and the Cumming story that you had on just before the break, is there was no emails and there were no texts. And a lot of the communication was done through landlines. And a lot of the time, it was somebody would ring somebody's house, and it was the wives who were at home, because they were at home a lot of the time. They were beside the phone. And so they were dealing with a lot of the messages that had to be managed. And very little stuff was written down. So at one point, the government issued a directive verbally that the army get ready to make plans to invade the North. But it was only issued verbally. And then when the army went back to the government and said, "Can we get that in writing?" they got a pink slip from the cabinet. And the pink slip just had the letter P on it, which basically says, "This is not written down anywhere. There's no record of this." So at every turn in this story, there's a lack of information. And it also allows people to deny what somebody else is saying about them.
Well, here's a piece now from episode 2. This is a news report from RTE Television from August of 1969.
Local men in the area decided to move the women and children and elderly people out.
This is from a TV report, but the people in it have their back to the camera so they can't be identified.
And when they were being put into the vans and private cars, which was to take them into another district for safety, they were being sniped on from the top of a local mill. And at one stage, when loading the people into the van, the women and children were forced to lie flat in the middle of the street, and some of them had to crawl up the street on their stomachs to get into the vans. The police made no attempt whatsoever to remove the sniper, and at one stage the sniper was actually pointed out to them, and the reply was, "Well, we can't do very much about it."
And they burned all the houses, they burned the houses and wrecked the houses and threw petrol bombs, and they stood and watched the houses burning down, and where there was once homes, there's nothing, only spare ground. There's nothing on this burger.
Were the police here at this time?
Yes, the police were in, and they let them come in on it. They destroyed people's homes, and they broke them up.
That's a news report from August of 1969 on RTE. And Nicola, what about those people who were displaced, whose homes were destroyed, as was described there? Where did they go when and if they crossed the border into the Republic?
Yeah, I mean, the archive of the refugees, I think, is something that a lot of people have found really striking. And that August was the beginning of refugees coming from the north to the south. And it, from then on, for the subsequent years, there would be thousands of them coming to the Republic, and they would come to camps in Gormanston. There was Finner Camp, which the army was running as well. And so the other phenomenon that happened as a result of that was that there was house swapping, and that would be where both Protestants and Catholics would swap houses. So previously, prior to this time, there had been a lot more mixed neighbourhoods, but it was when that at that time when literally they swapped houses so that Catholics could live in Catholic areas and Protestants could live in Protestant areas, that those areas then really solidified as Catholic and Protestant areas. Mm-hmm. So you just see that divide really coming in strongly at that time.
And Ronan, when I was listening to episode one with that description of the Battle of the Bogside, it's hard not to draw similarities between the violence as described then and the violence that we saw very recently in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, the parallels have been amazing, because we were editing archive a couple of weeks ago, which describes the building of the peace lines. And Vincent Kearney was on the TV that night talking about the fights at the peace lines. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the incidents that happened at that time was there was a crowd of people outside the British Embassy on Merrion Square, right beside Hollis Street Maternity Hospital. And they were focused on attacking the embassy. And the Labour TD, Michael O'Leary, and the local guard, the superintendent, went into the embassy and said to them, "Would you take down the Union Jack? It's provocative." And the embassy said to them, "Actually, we can't, because today is Princess Anne's birthday and we can't take down the Union Jack." And the very day I was in recording that, the British government had told their government offices to fly the Union Jack because the BBC presenters had been laughing at some government minister who had a Union Jack in his office. Mm-hmm. That is just constant parallels. We were doing the stuff about the Battle of the Bogside, and there were the fireworks riot on in Grafton Street as a result of the lockdown. And I was trying to explain it to somebody the other day why it had such an impact. And one of the reasons is, if you can imagine, you woke up in the morning and you heard Pascal Donoghue and Simon Harris had been sacked because of something they were doing behind the scenes as a response to the COVID crisis. That's the kind of impact. Those refugees were heard on the television and seen, or heard on the radio and seen on the television. And people were up in arms and they were rioting in Dublin. And Neil Blaney and Charlie Hyde behaved in a certain way, and months later it was discovered. Now, the interesting thing is we interviewed a historian named Brian Hanley, and he said in some ways the politicians lagged behind public opinion, because public opinion was outraged, but then public opinion changed when there was a chance that we in the South were going to get drawn into the conflict. So the politicians were running around trying to satisfy various levels of public opinion as well. All of which is
because
fascinating.
I remember now that recording of Jack Lynch's television address when he was talking about the Battle of the Bogside. And he did appear, didn't he, Nicolene, will you tell us about this, to make a commitment to people in Northern Ireland?
He did, and this is his famous speech, which is often referred to as his "We Will Not Stand Idly By" speech. And he actually didn't say idly. That word was sort of inserted into it at a later stage. But that was the crucial phrase in it, if you like, where he was appealing to the British government. He was appealing that they would, that the UN would step in. But he also said that phrase, we will no longer, the Irish government can no longer stand by and watch this happen. We no longer have faith in the RUC. And that really, I suppose, well, as Gregory Campbell mentioned in it, he felt that that was what he described as incendiary. And after that, we really saw things, you know, snowball, if you like, and that night in Belfast, things got really, really bad. So it seemed to just gather pace after that. Mm-hmm. Now, he did subsequently row back on that and take a much more conciliatory line in subsequent speeches. But that speech certainly was listened to, as everybody in our story says that they all heard that, and it had a huge impact.
Yeah, it seemed to set the framework for what was about to happen. Now, what's unusual with this is, as I mentioned at the start, there is going to be a documentary on television, on RT television, on Wednesday night. And a few people have asked whether, if they watch the documentary, will it ruin their enjoyment of the podcast, Ronan? Can you answer that one?
No, the documentary on the television will be a teaser for the podcast, and the podcast is a teaser for the documentary on the television. So the podcast is a much slower telling the story. But if you do want to see some of the people who, because we piggybacked on some of the TV, because of COVID, we piggybacked on some of their interviews. So if you want to see what some of the people look like who were talking, particularly if you want to see some of the archive, because while it's very strong on audio, it's also really, really interesting to look at. And then if you watch the TV documentary and you get a sense of the story in 50 minutes and you really want to get into it and listen to it at a slower pace and listen to it unfold, because even though we think everybody knows what the end of the story is, Nicky Lean had a friend who gave out to her and she said, no, don't tell me what the end of the story is because I want to listen through. So they work well with each other, the two pieces.
Well, it's a fascinating listen from what I've heard so far. And Nicky Lean, you said that episode 3 out today. So is it a weekly drop of an episode? Is that how it's working?
Yes, every Monday morning it's dropping and we've got 8 episodes and it will stay up there indefinitely. So, I mean, that for us is a great thing because our previous podcast, The Nobody Zone, that's still climbing. We're still getting 2,000 listens a day to that. So that's the benefit of the podcast, I suppose, that we just hope that this will build and build. And then, of course, that TV documentary will be on the player as well. It's on at 9:30 on Wednesday on RTE1, but that'll be on the RTE player as well.
So you can go back to it. If you want to listen to the podcast first and go back to the documentary, you can do that too. The choice is yours. Ronan Kelly, Nicky Lean Greer, makers of Gunplot, the new podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. First 3 episodes are up now, wherever you get your podcast from. The television documentary, to remind you, RT1 on Wednesday at 9:30. Looking forward to that one. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.